Today's daf is Ayin Chet. We're going to start at Ayin Zayin Amabet at the bottom. There's a few. Let's see. We have the Lokasha. We'll start from there, about 10 lines, the end of the line. We had, on the one hand, Tenei Ravon L'Chavero, right? And if I say, right, that was the Tamein Amar Smach Tichani, Ravino, and then Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel said, right? But even Macharlo said, remember, we had these two cases where he sells him for 1,000. In one case, you know, he gave him 200, the other case 500, right? And then we have one case where he said, Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel said it was Kone, and one case where he said it wasn't Kone. Okay, right? It was only Kone if he wrote a shtar. Otherwise, it wouldn't be Kone until he actually pays him all the money. So, right, in one case, it became flipped onto a loan. So he paid him the 200, and the sadeh is kanoi, according to Rashbag. No, sorry. In that case, the field isn't kanoi unless you write a shtar, that the field is sold to you, and the rest is going to be a loan. But in this case, he says if you pay 500, then basically he has to give him the rest of it, even lachar kamashanim, right? And it's like a loan, even without the shtar. So what do we answer? Lo kasha, had ka'av anafik azuse, had lo ka'av anafik azuse. One is a case where he keeps going and saying, I want the money, which means that he wants the money and he's not willing to sell the field unless he gets the money. Because if this guy's not going to pay him, he'll go find someone else who's going to give him the money. If he's not desperate for the money, then we'll push it out, then we'll assume the default is a loan. And here we see De'amarava. Rava says the same thing. Haiman de'zevim midi l'chavre, v'ka'av anafik azuze, somebody who sells something to his friend, and he keeps going saying, give me the rest of the money. Lo kane. Okay, but lo ka'av anafik azuze, kane. But if he's not looking for the money, then it's kone, and the guy just owes him the money. V'amarava, here's a different thing that Rava says about paying back loans. Haiman de'ozfe mea zuze l'chavre, somebody borrows 100 zuz from his friend. Upare zuza zuza. Okay, he pays him back a little bit at a time. Each time a zuz. Piraon have, eladi le taromakabe. This is okay if he eventually pays him all the money. However, the guy who gets the money can have a complaint against him, a legitimate complaint. Why? Da amarle afsitinu minai. Hauka afsitinu minai. He can say to him, you caused me to lose my money because when you pay me back a little bit at a time, they're just coins, they go, they get lost, and I don't even know where it is. You know, I'd much rather you would have paid me the whole thing at once and then I would have my money. Obviously, he's responsible to keep his money and keep tabs on it. That's why it's only a complaint. The guy actually paid him, but you shouldn't. What it's really saying is you shouldn't pay back people in this way. I saw a little note somewhere that whether we actually paskin like this or not. Is this something to take lahalacha or not? Okay, hahu gavra, another case. Dizavin le chamara lechavre. Okay, now generally when we see chamra, we assume it means wine. But in this case, the Mefarshim say it's not chamra, it's chamara, which means a chamor. Okay, in a minute we'll talk about why the Mefarshim assume that this is a chamor, not wine. Even though generally it says chamra, it means wine. So he sells a chamor to his friend. Upash lechad zuze, and he pays him all the money except for one zuz, okay, which obviously we're assuming is a very small percentage of the purchase. V'ka'av anafik azuze, and the guy keeps going and saying, I want my one zuz back. So yetiv rav ashi v'kamayim ba, ki agav namai, kane o lo kane. And the guy paid 99% of the purchase. There's one zuz left. You're going to say that the whole purchase is no good because he didn't pay back his one zuz, since the guy clearly wants his money. How desperate could he be for that one zuz? So Amar le Rav, Mordechai le Rav Ashi, Hachi Amar Avimi mehagronya mishmei deRava. Okay, so Rav Mordechai says to Rav Ashi, this is what Avimi said mehagronya in the name of Rava. Zuze kizuze dami velo kane. A zuz is a zuz, and therefore this is not a full transaction, and it's not kone. So first of all, let's just stop for a minute and talk about why they assume that this is a chamor and not wine. First of all, if it was wine, there's two reasons to think that it would be kone. Number one, wine spoils very easily. So therefore, the guy is going to want to get rid of his wine. He's not going to want to keep his wine very long. He'd rather sell his wine even if he's missing a zuz. The other issue with the wine is, we talked about this yesterday, that this whole thing is only when you can't split the property. But if you can split it, right? So in other words, the assumption is,
you could say he bought 99%
of it. Exactly. So the wine can be split, and therefore, but the donkey can't, okay? And there's an assumption, even though you could, in theory, own the donkey together, but obviously he doesn't really want to be doing that. So now they say, Amr le Rav Acha b'rid Rav Yosef le Rav Ashi. Okay, but now he says, you know, first Rav Mordechai said to Rav Ashi, it was said in the name of Rav that this is Zuzei Kazuzei and Lokani. Okay? But Rav Acha b'rid Rav Yosef says to Rav Ashi, v'hamrina mishmei de Rav, didn't we say in the name of Rav Kane that it is Kone? So Amr le, titargem shmatcha, okay, you should explain your case when it says it's Kone, b'mocher sadehu mipnei ra'ata. If you're selling your field because it's bad, this is similar to what the Mefreshim said about why it wouldn't be wine, because wine could go bad. Because if you have a field that you don't like and you want to get rid of, then it's Kone, even if there's one zuz left over. However, if you're selling it because you're desperate to get the money, then it's not going to be Kone. Okay, Pshita. Now they're going to say, one case is Pshita, but another case, we're not clear. And this is going to be, and that's if we already have on the one hand, there's you want to sell it Mipnei Ra'ata, and therefore you're going to basically be wanting to sell it. On the other hand, there's, if you're desperate for the money, what if there's a case where we can't really tell? Are you desperate for the money? Right? Because we don't always know why somebody's selling it, why they're pushing to sell it. Or are they trying to get rid of a bad piece of property? You have to remember, when you're trying to get rid of a bad piece of property, what's the issue? You want it to be Kone as soon as possible before the guy realizes that it's bad and that he doesn't really want it. So Pshita, it's obvious in a case where a guy was buying Lizvune Bimea, he was trying to sell a field for 100. Below Ashkach, he couldn't find buyers for 100. V'zevin b'matayim. So then he sells. Now it seems weird. What's going on here? Okay. So it seems that, okay, one difficult explanation, because the second case becomes more difficult according to this, is that he finds someone who's willing to sell for 200, and then clearly he wants to get it done, right? But because he wants the guy to not figure out that he's charging double the price. But that seems like a difficult explanation. We'll go with one that seems to work better, which is, he needs money. So what does he do? He tries to sell a field for 100. He can't. So he takes a different field that's worth more, because generally people don't want to buy such a small piece of property. So he has a better luck of selling a bigger piece of property. So he sells this bigger piece of property for 200. V'ka'al v'nefek azuzei. And he's trying to get all the money out of the guy. And the guy still hasn't given him all the money. So in that case, lo kane. We're assuming, since he's categorized, this guy is desperate for money. So therefore, it's not Kone. Ela ibay lizvune b'mea. What if he was trying to sell a field for 100? V'lo eshkach. And he didn't find buyers. V'itara chava mishkach. However, in this case, if he had put more effort into it, he could have sold it for 100. But he didn't. Instead of putting in the effort, what did he do? V'lo tarach. Didn't bother. V'zevin b'matayim. And then he sells for 200. And then ka'av v'nafek azuzei. So he is looking desperate for the money because he's trying to get money from someone. But my, kimocher sadeh mipnei ra'ata dame olo. What's the issue here? They think that since he could have bothered to sell for 100 and he didn't make the effort, do we say that he didn't make the effort and he sold this other property for 200 because the 200 property must have been a bad piece of land? Otherwise, he wouldn't have been so easily willing. If he only really wanted 100 zuz, why would he go sell this bigger piece of property for more money when he doesn't need that money? So, do we say he must have been selling it because that field probably wasn't so great anyway, and therefore he was happy to get rid of it, and therefore we would say it's Kone? Or do we say no, since maybe he didn't bother because you could say he was lazy, or you could say that maybe he wanted the money right now, and if he tried to bother, it would take him more time, and maybe he was so desperate to get the money, and then he falls into the category of desperate to get the money, in which case, until the guy gives him the full 200, it's not considered a sale. And the answer, obviously, is teiku. We don't know the answer, what would be in this case. Okay, when we have, again, a conflict between, on the one hand, he's selling you mipnei ra'ata, which means he's going to want to get rid of it as quickly as possible, even if you haven't given him all the money. He'll be makna to you. Versus the issue of Ka'ayo v'nafik azuzei, where he's basically saying, I want my money, I want my money, I want my money. So when we merge the two, the question is which one, or, you know, it's not clear if he's selling it, what the reason is. Is he selling it to get rid of it, or is he selling it because he wants the money? Then the question would be what to say. And there we don't know the answer.
It's also reasonable not to resolve it in order to avoid the history question of, well, what was he trying to do and how much effort did he put in? And, like, it's very, very hard to resolve that.
Yeah, and therefore,
so it makes some sense at some level that they're not saying that that's what you have to do to decide this. It's take. We're not going to try to go back and figure out what he was trying to do.
But I mean, wouldn't
go back to
well, again,
state of mind.
You have to say, though, I mean, this is a bad place to say teku, because if there really was such a case, the question is, what would be the halacha? Is it kone, is it not kone? This could be a practical case. Right, exactly. But you could see where such a case would exist, and then we'd be stuck. And then the question is, what's the halacha? You'd have to look up. I didn't see, but you could see here, if you look in the Rambam or Shulchan Aruch, you know, you could try to figure out what the halacha would be. I assume probably the principle of Hamotzi Mechaber Alav Haraya would kick in somehow. And okay, Zachar Tachamar V'etakedar. So now we're going to the very end of it's actually not the end of the Mishnah, but some piece of the Mishnah that we didn't discuss yet, which is in the case of Devar Ha'aved, where you hired someone to bring the priperine or the stuff for the wedding or for the funeral, and he didn't do it. So what did we learn? So Socher Alehen Omita'an. So now that means, right, you can hire people in their stead, and they have to cover the cost.
The people who reneged.
Or mita'an, or you could trick them, right, for a higher price. Pretend to pay them a higher price, and then you don't actually have to pay them. So now we want to deal with the socher alehem. Ad kama socher alehem. This is a very interesting question. So if they renege, and you need it for this wedding, right, so until now, the cases we've discussed were where, let's go back to those other cases where it was 8 dinarim, right? And they did half the job before, and now you're left, you're only going to be able to hire someone for 6. So we take 2 out of their salary, right? And we give the 2 to the other guys, and basically the first guys end up getting paid 2, and the second guys get paid 6, and all is good. But now, what are they going to say? Is there a cap, okay, about how much you can cause them to pay? Can you make them pay out of pocket? In theory, if it's the very last minute, you can find workers to do it for 4 times the price. And then that's going to be more than those workers were even going to get paid in the first place. So can you make them pay out of pocket? So, Amar Rav Nachman, ad kedei scharan. Up until what you were going to pay them, basically, according to this example, up to 4. Okay, so if the new workers want 8, so you take the whole thing from the old workers. If the new workers want more than that, then you can't take it away from the workers. Now, part of the reason for this halacha could be very simply, this is very, very actual, you know, relevant. You can be in a situation and you're desperate, right? So what do? First of all, you're desperate time-wise and you don't want to waste your time. You go to the first guy. The guy wants an exorbitant fee. You say, well, what do I care? I'm not paying for it. The workers have to cover it. So you'll say, sure, I'll take it for that price. And then it's unfair to the workers because they didn't negotiate the contract, right? They could have maybe negotiated the guy down. But you just said, sure, no problem, because it's not your money you're spending. So therefore, this is a way to protect the workers that they don't end up paying some exorbitant fee that really was totally unnecessary. And he could have negotiated them down. He could have found someone else to do it for less. Okay, that's what Rav Nachman says. But now Rava questions this. Etive Rava la Rav Nachman. Ad arba'im v'chamishim zuz. Okay, it says you could do it. Right, this is a different thing, but it was very similar, where you could do it until 40 or 50 zuzim. In other words, you could basically make them pay a lot of money, which would obviously be out of pocket. So that seems to go against what you're saying, Rav Nachman. So Amar Leh, Ki Tanya Hahi, when that Braita was talking, it was talking about Shebata Chavila Liado. That's a case, okay, now there's a whole bunch of different interpretations of this, that you had something, in other words, the workers never have to pay out of pocket, but what's the situation? Let's say the workers, okay, the person we talked about, it was common in those days, the worker would come do work in your house, and he would bring his own tools, right? You have a workman who comes to your house, he brings tools, and he does his stuff, and he might leave his tools in your house. So in this case, the worker came, brought his tools, so you can basically sell the tools and use that money to pay your workers, until Arim Hamishim Zuz. Right. Some people say that he gave you a collateral in the event that he didn't do the job, and you can take it from the collateral. Okay, but it has to be something of his, and then the Mefreshim basically distinguish between, it has to be something of his that was for this job, as opposed to, let's say, bimikre, okay, coincidentally, he happened to have brought you something of his to watch. Okay, you have something of his in your house. You can't take it from there. It has to be something that's connected with this job that you can then take it from. Okay, that's how they answer it in the end, which is actually a lot more extreme than this other case, because to take all their supplies and sell them, that's not so, you know, that could come out to a lot of money also. Okay, new Mishnah. Now we're moving off of jobs, we're moving into renting. Hasocher ta chamor laholicho bahar v'holicho bebik'a. You rent a chamor to take it to the mountains. Okay, you specifically say, I'm taking this chamor to the mountains. V'holicho bebik'a. But in the end, you took it to a valley. Or you agree that you were going to take it babik'a. You stipulated when you rented it, that's what you wanted it for. V'holicho bahar. And then you took it to a mountainous region. Afilu zo eser milim, v'zo eser milim. Even if you walked it the same amount, like let's say you said to the guy, I'm going to take it on a 10-mile hike, and then you took it for a 10-mile hike, but so you said, I'm going to take it for a 10-mile hike in the mountains, and you took it for a 10-mile hike in the valley. Umeta, and it dies. Chayav. Okay? If it dies, then you're responsible. Okay? Because you basically changed the agreement. Okay, you said you were going to do something with it, and you did something else, and that, we're assuming right now, is what caused its death. Now we're going to start with some distinctions, and then the Gemara is going to ask right away, why in the first case does it just say simply chayav, and in the later cases, it starts to distinguish. What's the difference? So we'll get there soon. Hasocher et hachamor leholicha bahar, beholicha bebika. So you rent the chamor to take it to the mountain, and you take it to the bika, to the valley. Im hichlika patur, vim huchma chayav. If it slipped and fell, then you're going to be patur because you said you were going to take it to the mountains. Now, the mountains are more slippery than the valley. So if it happened to have slipped in the valley, we're not going to assume it's your responsibility for taking it to a different place. Right? In the first case, it doesn't matter what happened, no matter what, you're chayav. In these cases now, we're going to say it depends what happened and which direction it went in. V'im huchma, and if it overheated in the valley, which is a warmer place and there's less air, then you're chayav. Because then we can assume that this man, when you rented this donkey to go in the mountains, the owner knew that he could handle mountain air. But he didn't know that you were going to take him to the valley where it was very hot and he overheated and died. If, now what's the flip? L'holicha bebik'a v'holicha bahar. You rented it to take it to the valley and you took it to the mountain instead. So now it's going to be the opposite. If it slips, you're chayav, because the mountains are much more slippery, and you shouldn't have taken them there. But if he overheated, patur, because there it's much cooler in the mountains, and therefore if it overheated, you're going to be exempt. But if it overheated because of the strenuous work it was doing on the incline of the mountain, then you're going to be chayav. Okay, then it's an overheating that was caused by bringing it specifically to the mountain. Okay, that's the second part of the Mishnah. The third part is Hasocher tachamor v'hivrika. We're going to see two different interpretations in the Mishnah and the Gemara about what hivrika is. But it's some case where the animal either gets blinded or something, it gets a worm in its leg and it has trouble walking and you have to lead it and it's a much harder walk for you. But in the end, you can still do it. You can still have the animal do the work. Oshana set angaria, or the king seizes the animal and says, I need him for my work. But the assumption right now is we're assuming at some point you'll get it back. So, omer lo hareshal chalafanecha. The owner, okay, the maskir, can say to the socher, to the guy who rented it, this is your tough luck, okay? This happened while, you know, this... If I had the animal, it would have been my problem. You have the animal right now. It's your problem, okay? Because these problems are what we call resolvable problems, okay? They're not great. It's not amazing, but it's your bad luck that caused it, so to speak, or in other words, it's no more my fault than yours, and you have to deal with it. Soon, again, in the Gemara, we'll see some different cases and different halachot in this area, different psikot. Meta onish berah. But if it died or got, you know, broke a leg or something, then chayav la milo chamor. Okay, if the assumption is meta here is just in a regular, you know, randomly it just happened to die, or you got a broken leg, in which case it can't walk at all, then we're going to say chayav la milo chamor. Then you have to give him a different chamor. Okay, because in that case, right, as opposed to the angaria and the hivrika, where the animal can still do the job, in this kind of case, the animal can't do the job at all, okay, because it died, and then the maskir, the guy who rented it to you, has to give you a new chamor. Okay, this is very relevant. When we learned this last year in the Tute class, we talked a lot about that this is all about, you know, you rent a car, what the agreements are, what the insurance plan is, right, and who's responsible for what. And if you did something that you weren't supposed to do with the car, right, you took it to some area that you weren't supposed to bring it to, right, all kinds of things like that, where question is what your responsibility is and what the responsibility of the rental company is, right? If the car gets stolen, so, right, they're responsible to give you a new car. But if the car is, you know, like what if it's Hivrika, it's not working as well, right? Nowadays you would return the car and say, give me a new car. But according to the halacha, if you can still manage, right, or it gets taken, seized by the, right, you know, nowadays you have to, like if you have a minivan, you have to, can be given over to the army. The army can say, we need this car, right? So if you rent the car like that, the army takes it. So they can say, well, you'll get it when the army gets back and, you know, tough luck. Okay. So now the Gemara starts out and says, Maishna resha delo kamaflig, u maishna seifa de kamaflig. What's the difference between the first case where the Mishnah said, if you take this chamor and you said, you, by the way, I saw a note that said in the Koran, they had a good note which said that basically most rental agreements, you don't stipulate that you're taking it to a particular area, right? When you rent a car, you don't say, I'm driving this on streets and not on mountain roads, or you don't generally do that. So the comment was basically saying that the Mishnah is talking about a unique case where somebody specifically did stipulate. Okay, but normally the standard was they didn't necessarily stipulate. But here, if you stipulated that you were going to take it to the Har and you took it to the Bik'ah, or the reverse, so this Risha said, you're Chayav no matter what happens. The second part of the Mishnah all of a sudden started distinguishing, well, it depends what happens to the animal. So now we're going to have to explain, well, what's the case in the Risha? Why doesn't it depend on the situation? Why is it that no matter how you switch things, you're always going to be Chayav? Okay, no matter how the animal died. Whereas in the Risha, it sounded like it depended. So Amrei, we're going to see a few different answers. Amrei debei Rabbi Yanai, Reisha shemeta machmat avir. The Reisha is talking about a case where he died from breathings, the air. And then you could say very simply, damrinan, and that you have to have something that can go both ways. The second cases that we saw were about, well, it's more slippery in the mountain. So if it slipped in the mountain and you were supposed to take it to the valley, you're going to be chayav. But if you were supposed to take it to the mountain and you took it to the valley and it slipped, well, then you're not responsible. So here we're going to show something that's going to be, it's going to be bad for the animal either which way you switched it. So if it's machmat avir, you can say da'amrinan avira dahar katla, va'amrinan avira debika katla. You could say the animal was an animal that was used to mountain air, and therefore the air in the Bik'ah killed it. Or you could say the animal was used to valley air, and therefore when you took it to the mountains, right, the high altitudes, he couldn't handle the high altitudes. So air is something that can be a problem either direction, and that's why in the first case, we can say that you're chayav as the socher, you changed the agreement and therefore caused the death of the animal. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina amar kigon shemeta machmat uvtsina. Okay, what's uvtsina? Uvtsina is ayefut, Rashi says. Okay, it means either ayefut, again, you could have it, that you took it to the mountain and it was very hard for it to you know, climb up. The uphill was very hard and it got tired. And right, and if it's in the Bik'ah, you could say it got very tired because of the heat. Right, there was a lot of heat there. It was very hot, and it didn't cool him down, and therefore he got very tired. So either the heat, right, you think about going on a hike, right? If it's very hot, even a downhill will be tough. If it's very steep, right, then you're constantly climbing, that will be hard for you, even if there's air. So the second is you could say it died from exhaustion. How we know, by the way, how it's determined what the cause of death is a whole separate question that the Gemara doesn't really deal with, right? In other words, it's not so clear if you can prove how the animal actually died. That's a whole separate thing. But here they're assuming that you kind of could. Rava amar kegon shechisha nachash. Okay, this is that it got bitten by a snake. Okay, now why, right, this is something, so now there's a few different ways of understanding this. Either you could say that the snake this is like when you say, oh, I could have, you know, if I hadn't taken that bus, I would have taken a different bus and the bomb wouldn't have gone off, you know, and it wouldn't have, right? This is, you were supposed to take it to the mountain. You took it to the Bik'ah, and it happens a snake came up and bit the animal, right? Bit the animal and killed it. So now if you hadn't taken it to the Bikah, well, that snake never would have been there. And therefore, it's because you took it to the Bikah that it got bitten by a snake. That's one explanation. I'm trying to remember last year, one of my younger students gave a good explanation. I think it was that there's certain snakes, there's animals are used to their surroundings. And that if there's snakes, let's say it's an animal that's used to the mountains, it's used to the snakes in the mountains and it's kind of immune to them. But if you take it then to the Bikah, the snakes that hang out there are not ones that they're used to, and therefore it could be that that changed it. Anyway, that's another possible explanation. Okay, so those were three ukimtot, we call them, right? That the reisha of the Mishnah didn't make any sense with the second part. So we have to assume it's a unique case where somehow it can go in either direction. But now we're going to have a fourth explanation, which is a different type of explanation than what we're going to deal with for the next little while. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamane, who is this according to? Rabbi Meir, the reisha is not the same opinion as the middle case in the Mishnah. Okay, the reisha is just Rabbi Meir's opinion. What's Rabbi Meir's opinion? Damar kol ha-ma'avir al-dat shabalabai nikra gazlan. He calls anyone who does against the balabayit's wishes, if he changes, and the balabayit he agreed with on something, and he does something different, he's called a gazlan. Okay, in which case, he's fully responsible. Okay, so Rashi even says it very well. He says, if you're a gazlan, then what happens, right? What did we learn about gazlan? We learned this all in Baba Kama. Kama le birshute, the item becomes his own. Lihitrayev, again, it's not like he owns it, but for the purposes of litrayev b'cholom seha, right? Basically, if you steal something and then your house burns down, so you're obviously still responsible to return the stolen item, even though it was onus. So that's what Rabbi Meir says. Anyone who changes from the balabayit is a gazlam, meaning that you're chayavin onus. In which case, that would explain very well why no matter what, if you changed the rules, even if the animal didn't die because you changed the rules, just by going against, it's like we call a breach of contract. You broke the contract because you didn't do what you said you were going to do. Therefore, you're called a gazlan. This is very nice that they say Rabbi Meir says this, and then we can say, so the safe is Rabbi, I'm sorry, the reish is Rabbi Meir, the middle case is Chachamim, who disagree with him. But now, the Gemara says, it's very nice you said this, but how do you know that Rabbi Meir actually says this? Obviously, it wasn't such a known thing that Rabbi Meir says, it says very nicely here, kolam avir al-tab shabal bayit nikra gazlan. So Rabbi Chiya said this in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that this is Rabbi Meir, that he says this. And now the Gemara wants to say, well, hey, Rabbi Meir, where did we ever see, hey is Eze, which Rabbi Meir, where do we see the statement of Rabbi Meir that anyone who's Ma'avir al-Da'at Balabayit Nikra Gazlan? So we're going to have a few attempts. Each time we're going to bring a case, and then we're going to say, oh no, that's not the reason why Rabbi Meir is Mechayev there. It's a different reason. So hey, Rabbi Meir, which one? Ilema, if you want to say, again, whenever the Gemara starts, Ilema, we know they're going to reject it, right? If you say this, nah. If it's Rabbi Meir Ditzaba, which is the case that we're going to see inside very soon, in the next, I think it's the next Mishnah, Ditznan, Hanotein Semer Latzaba, Litzbo Alo Adom, Utzvao Shachor, Shachor Utzvao Adom, Rabbi Meir Omer, Notein Lo Dmeit Simro. If you give Tzemer to a dyer to dye the wool, and you say, I want you to dye it red, and he dyes it black, so what does Rabbi Meir say? Notein lo dmei tzamro. He treats him exactly like a gazlam. What does he say? Okay, let's say you took my wool, and you dyed it the wrong color, so you keep the wool, and you give me back the money so I can go buy new wool. That's Rabbi Meir's Shita, which basically, if we stop here, we can already explain our potential answer. What does it show? You were ma'avir al-dat balabayit. You changed from what the balabayit said. You took my wool and you colored it a different color. You're now a gazlan, and you basically keep the item and pay me the value. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Okay, this isn't relevant for what we're doing for our purposes right now, but since they're quoting the machloket, they're going to quote Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. First of all, he says we don't treat it like he's a gazlan. Okay, he doesn't think it goes like that. But he says the situation depends. Im hashevach. Now, what happens? You took tzemer. Let's say that was worth 100. You invested in it 20. Okay. Let's say your dye and all that was worth 20, and it goes up to now it's worth 150. So comes Rabbi Yehuda and he says like this: Im hashevach yeter ala yitziah. It went up in value by 50, and that's greater than 20, right? If the amount that it goes up in value is greater than the amount that you spent on it, the hotzaot, So now what are we going to, I'll basically say this in other words, the Yad Sabah ala Tachtona, right? He's always going to lose out whatever it will be. He's going to pay, he's going to get paid the lower amount. So what do we say? Noten lo et hayitziah. He gets his 20 back. Okay, he invested 20. He made it go up to 50, right? Up by 50. He gets 20. He gets paid 20. Okay, and as he gets paid the lesser amount, really he should get paid 150 because that's what he made it go up in value. But he doesn't because he changed from what he was supposed to do. V'im hayitziyah yeter al hasheva. Let's say it's the reverse. He spent 50. And now it only, for some reason, went up in value to 120. Okay, it's a bit of extreme numbers, but let's say, for whatever reason, it only increased the value by 20. So he might yitziyah yitera la shevach, no tein lo et hashevach. So he gets the 20. Okay, in other words, he gets the fact that it writes the shevach instead of the yitziyah. So in this case, he'll get 20. No matter what, he gets the lower amount, but he does get something. Okay, so now, again, why do we bring this? We'll get more into these opinions when we see them in the Mishnah. But why do we bring this? Because it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda says, and I'm sorry, Rabbi Meir says, V'kol mavir ad apa abay nikra gazlan. So now the Gemara rejects this and says, no, mimai. Dil mashane hatam dekanya b'shinoi maaseh. Maybe you would say the case of the dyer is different because what did he do? He took my tzemer and he turned it into something else. He did what's called the shinoi maaseh. What did we learn when we learned halachot of gazlanim? That if you steal something and change it, the shinoi maaseh is kone. And that's why he's kone, the tzemer, and he just pays the demei tzemro. Now this is a bit problematic. Why? Because most of the mefarshim think that shinoi maaseh is only kone in a gzela case. And this was not a gzela case. So ma pitom that we're saying that shinoi maaseh can be kone in a case where there was no theft. So some people say that, so the Ramban says that this is a form of gzela. That's what he says. It's some sort of form of gzela because you're taking my item and you're using it for something different. Now, it's not exactly gzela, but it's some form of gzela. Rabbeinu Peretz says, no, it's actually kone in other cases, not just theft cases. Shinoi maaseh is kone in general, and therefore you could say that shinoi maaseh is kone in this case. Okay, so now they say that's he's not kone because kolam avir al-dabal bay nikra gazlan, and therefore we have to come up with something else. We have to find a different statement of Rabbi Meir. The next two cases are going to be tzedakah-related cases, which are very interesting in terms of how to relate to tzedakah. Ela hada Rabbi Meir de migbat purim. And here we're going to learn all sorts of halachot about Purim. In fact, we're going to see the source for certain halachot that you know about in Purim. Rabbi Meir was talking about the money collected for Purim. And his opinion about that is going to be the opinion that we see. Kol ha'mavir al-dabal al-bayit nikra gazlan. But again, we're going to reject this one. D'tanya, here's the braita. Magbit Purim lepurim. When you have money set aside for Purim, you collected money for matanot levyonim, it has to be given to the poor people for Sudat Purim, basically. Magbit ha'ir la'ota ha'ir. If you give tzedakah for a particular city, designated for that city, the tzedakah money has to go to that city. Ve'ein medakdikim b'davar. Okay, there's a few different interpretations about what this means. Some people say it refers to the whole magbit purim l'purim. It has to go to that right, that for Purim. And the magbit la'ota ha'ir has to go for that year. But ein medakdikim b'davar. But if it got switched over, you know, and it's not used for that, it's okay. In other words, ideally it should be, but we're not so medactic about it if it didn't work out. Other people say no. What it actually means is we don't check to make sure that this is the halacha that, you know, some people say on Purim you're supposed to give tzedakah money to everybody, you're not supposed to ask questions. So some people say that's what it means here. You don't check that the guy, so now there's a few different interpretations. Either you don't check that the guy's definitely poor, like you don't have to go checking and making sure that he's not just claiming he wants money, but he has money. Or some people say that, actually very interesting, that you don't have to check that he's Jewish. If somebody says, I want money on Purim, you have to give them money even if they're not necessarily Jewish. You don't start checking into things. Ava lokhim et ha'agalim v'shochatin. So what do you do? What would they do with this money for Purim? They would take agalim and they would shech them. V'ochlin otam. And then they would feed them to the people of the city. Okay, now, what if they didn't calculate properly and there was extra food left over? So what would they do? Hamotar yipolakish shel tzedakah. They would sell the rest and put what's ever left into the tzedakah fund. Some people actually say that the money collected would have to be left for the following year Purim, that it really is so designated, they had to be designated for Purim, but most of the people don't say that. The assumption is at that point, you did what you did with the money, and now you can just use it for regular things. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, okay, we're continuing in this braita. We haven't yet gotten to Rabbi Meir. Remember, that's what we're looking for. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, magbit purim lepurim, ve'ein ha'ani rashai likach mehem ritzu'a lesandalo. He can't go buying if he needs a leather strip for his shoe. He can't go buy with that money. Elan Kane, okay, until now we were talking about, right, what's the difference? We switched subjects all of a sudden. The first was, what does the community do with the money that they gave to the poor, right? So they buy these animals and all that. What if they gave money to an ani? Is he bound by the halacha that he can only use it for his perm suda? What's his obligation, right? The first was, what's the community's obligation? Now we talk about what's his obligation. So what do we say here? The ani can't go buying anything else with it. Ela im kein hitna b'ma'amad anshei ha'ir. Unless he stipulated in front of the anshei ha'ir, and I guess they approved it, basically. Okay, you can't just do it on your own. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov shamar mishum Rabbi Meir. Here we have Rabbi Meir. What is Rabbi Meir basically saying? If you get money for a specific purpose, the community gave you the money for Purim, you have to use it for Purim. You can't use it for anything else. So here you see that anyone who's ma'avir, al-da'at balabayit, right, the community who gave him the tzedakah money is the balabayit here. He's a gazlan, and it's forbidden for him to do it. The last part of the Braita, which again now is no longer relevant for our purposes of Rabbi Meir, but Rashbag Mekel. Okay, now they say Rashbag is Mekel in this area, which seems to imply that he could go buy something else with it. Now, the community's obligation is to give it to him for Purim. But if he uses it for something else, so he can use it for something else. So again, the Gemara is going to reject this and say, no, it's different here. Dilmahatam Nami, Da'adata de Purim hu diyavle. Adata de midi achrina lo yavle. He gave him this money specifically for Purim, and therefore, he didn't give it to him for any other purpose, and therefore he's not allowed to use it. Some of the freshim add, which I think makes a lot of sense, what's the issue on Purim? You have to give matanot lev yonim. Your obligation is somewhat dependent on what the poor person does with it, because you're supposed to, according to this, you're supposed to give it to him for his suda, and if he doesn't use it for his suda, and potentially you might not have fulfilled your obligation. So therefore, you owe something as the poor person. You owe to the other person so that you're enabling him to be mechayim the mitzvah. And that's different than a typical case, right? That's not your typical situation. So therefore, this is not another case of kolam avir al da'at balabayit nikra gazlan. It's unique to Hilchot Purim. Third case, which is also going to be a tzedakah case. Elahad Rabbi Meir. It must be this Rabbi Meir. Titanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir. Hanotein dinar la'ani likach lo chaluk. If you give money to a poor person to buy him a robe, lo yikach bo talit. He can't buy a talit with it. Talit lo yikach bo chaluk. Mipnei shemavir al da'atato shebalabayit. If you say, I'm giving you this money to buy something in particular, that ani has to buy something in particular that you told him. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You know, you're not allowed to do that. So now again, right, this would be classic. You give someone money on the street to buy food, right? And then they go with it and they buy drugs, cigarettes, right? Or cigarettes or something like that, right? It's obviously everybody's main concern, right? That's why people don't like to give money when you don't know what they're going to do with the money. They'd rather give them food if that's what you want to give them. But here's where, you know, you specifically stipulate, I'm giving you food to eat. You know, I want you to take this money and buy food with it. And then the guy goes and buys cigarettes. So is that okay? So according to this, it's not okay. He's not allowed to do that. But now they're going to say again, this isn't because kolam avir al da'at balabayit nikra gazlan. This isn't a typical case because, again, this is a unique. Why? Dilma shanei hatam, okay, here there's something additional, some other factor that you might not have thought of. Ta'atu lemichshedei. It's going to reflect poorly on the person who gave the tzedakah money if the person doesn't buy a chaluk with it or a talit with it or food with it or whatever he said. Da'amre inshe, because people will say, Amar planya, zavnina le levusha le planya anya, velo zavinle. People are going to say, hey, you said you were buying a jacket for this guy who's living on the street and he doesn't have a jacket. You must have been saying you're going to give him money, but obviously you didn't give him the money. Right? You said you were going to give the guy food to eat and I see the guy has no food to eat. Okay? Inam is, you know, like glima velo zavana. It's just another thing, right? Or people are going to say, you said you were buying him a glima and you didn't. Okay? And therefore, again, this is the same thing as before, that maybe the ani has to realize, it's actually very interesting in terms of the poor person has to understand that he's not the only person in the equation. There's someone who gave him the money that he has a certain obligation to them. When it comes to Purim, he has an obligation to allow the person to be Yotzei the Mitzvah. When it comes to this case, he has an obligation to make sure the other person doesn't end up looking like a what's the word?
Welch.
What?
Like he welched on what he was doing.
Right. Like he welched on what he was doing. You know, like basically he says something and actually doesn't do what he says. So therefore, these are unique halachot hilchot tzedakah, and they're not relevant to our case. Now they're going to finally bring another case. This one we are actually going to prove, though. We're going to reject this. We're going to say im ken. Notice what it said. Okay, I don't know if you picked up on this, but remember the term that we were trying to find, Rabbi Meir. Kol ha-mavir al da'at ba'al ha-bayit nikra gazlan. Now notice what it said here. Go back. What does it say? Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Meir, Hanotein dinar lani lekach lo chaluk, lo yikach bo tali, tali lekach lo chaluk, mipnei shema'avir al da'ato shel ba'al ha-bayit. Because he's going against what the Baal HaBayit told him, right? And here's the exact words we were looking for. So now the Gemara is going to say, if really we're concerned about this chashad, that people are going to say, oh, look at this guy, he doesn't fulfill what he says, then what should it have said? Im kein litni mipnei ha-chashad. It should have said, he can't do this because of the chashad, because it will look bad. My mipnei shema'avir al da'at ba'al ha-bayit. But what does it say instead? It says, mipnei shema'avir al da'at ba'al ha-bayit. What does that mean? Shema mina, mishum deshanele, v'chol ha-mavir al da'at ba'al ha-bayit nikra gazlan. It specifically says the reason is because he changes from what the ba'al ha-bayit said. So there we in the end do prove it from the tzedakah case. And we say that it's because he's ma'avir al da'at ba'al ha-bayit, he's called a gazlan, and he's not allowed to do it. And therefore, we can learn from here. And again, this was our fourth explanation for the resha of the Mishnah. Why does it just blanket say chayav? Not because it's a unique case where it can go both ways, whether, you know, it can be dangerous in the har and dangerous in the bik'ah, but it's where we say the whole first thing is just Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Meir thinks anyone who takes, if you stipulate the agreement, I'm taking it to the har, and you take it to the bik'ah, you've gone against the agreement, you've broken the contract, you're a gazlan. You're basically fully responsible for this animal, even if the animal dies for no reason that was your fault. Onus. Okay, and therefore we say that's the fourth explanation. The resha could be Rabbi Meir. Okay, next case. Now we're going to go further on in the details of the Mishnah. Hasocher tachamor vivrika, my ivrika, hachatir gemu nehorita. It means he was blinded. Rav Amar avzeket. There were worms that crawled into the leg and ate away at the leg of the animal, which made it harder for him to walk. Tahuda amarle avzeket bemilta demalka. So there was a case now, we're going to bring a case where we see this word avzeket being used. Okay, this is a weird Gemara where they just kind of bring some random story to show this avzeket. The guy who was in charge of the king's wardrobe said, there's a worm in the stuff of the king. Amrulei b'mai, b'tlei kesef o b'tlei zahav. They were worried. He was basically saying, it's not my fault, a worm got in, right? So they want to know, is he really responsible or not? So they said, was it in the linen clothing or the wool clothing? The kesef is the linen and the zahav is the wool, right? In terms of ramot, of how important they were. Ikad amrei b'tzle kesef amar v'katzloa. Some people say he said it was in the linen and they killed him because worms don't eat through linen. Ikad amrei b'tzle zahav amar v'shafkua. So we'll say it was in the gold ones and they actually let him live. Two versions of the story, whether the guy died or whether he was able to live. Okay, I guess we'll stop here for today. Tomorrow we'll start with the Sangaria. We're going to see two different interpretations, different cases of what it means if the king takes you away. And we're going to see a unique opinion that it depends on the situation, how the king seized it, what the case was, and then we're going to try to talk a little bit more about that. Analyze that shita. Okay, we'll start here tomorrow.